Observe the new birth of words used for purpose. Here to protect our pride and the pen. Been riding the wind, so we tight to the end. This lyrical b-boy, Baba, now be exercising the sins like Father Rico.
Welcome back to the Voices from the Frontline segment of the Public Affairs Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web at www.kpfk.org. So in a decision last week, Los Angeles immigration judge Bruce Eisenhorn ordered an end to deportation proceedings against Heather Hamed and Michelle Shahade, members of the Los Angeles 8. So joining us today is Michelle and Mark Vanderhoot, who is one of his co-lead counsels of the LA 8 since January of 87, and he's also representing the National Lawyers Guild. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So let's just start, Michelle. I mean, this is 20 years of constant threat of deportation that's had an impact on your family and probably everyday life. What's it been like? I mean, what's it like to have the second time that the judge has thrown out this case? How do you feel?
Well, I feel really great about the decision, and you know, it confirms, you know, what we have said all along, that the government has no merit in the charges that they accused us of doing, and in the same time, it confirms that they have nothing. And it's been a political case since day one. And if you read carefully the judge's decision, and Mark probably will talk about this, you'll see that even the judge kind of insinuates that this has been an embarrassment to the law.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I'm still, you know, not there yet, because the record of the government for the past 20 years, you know, have shown that if you really get all hopeful, they come back and do another, senseless thing. So let's hope that this time the government comes to its senses and not appeals the courageous decision of the judge.
Yeah, I mean, this has this has implications. I mean, so Mark, let's talk a little bit, because what is this ruling, the significance of this ruling, given that the same judge, I think in 2002, threw the case out and the federal courts appealed? What's the possibility of an appeal this time?
Well, the government has the right to appeal, and they have 30 days to appeal, and they go to the Board of Immigration Appeals, which is a very political entity. It's after Attorney General Ashcroft decimated the board about 3 years ago, left in mostly individuals sympathetic to the Justice Department's general prosecutorial efforts, and it is a political entity. So we're dealing with that issue if the government decides to appeal. But the reality is this is actually the fourth time this case has been thrown out by various courts, second time by Judge Einhorn, but the fourth time overall. Each time the government has appealed or they've gone back to Congress to get the law changed, to essentially get around one of the decisions of a court, whether it was the federal court or the immigration court, and to continue going after the LA 8. This prosecution has been, as Michelle says, a true embarrassment, and that's what the immigration judge said, Judge Einhorn. And it's been a very sad commentary on our prosecutorial efforts. The government has used, since day one, the LA 8 case to try to establish the right to go after people who have done nothing criminal, never supported any terrorist activity, but who support organizations abroad the United States doesn't like. And they've used this case to try to establish the legal right to go after them. That's what this case is all about. It's not about Hutter and Michelle being dangerous people or any of the other members of the 8. The government knows that.
I mean, so we're talking specifically, the government has tried to use the McWarren-Walter Act, the 1990 Immigration Act, the 1996 Anti-Terrorism Act, and then the Patriot Act. So each time they've tried to use this case to test the provisions of the law. So what does this victory mean in terms of the Patriot Act as its most recent use?
Well, what the judge did in this ruling is sort of twofold. One is that he threw out the case because as we were preparing for trial in July of 2005 and finally going to Cutter and Michelle were going to get their day in court where the government was going to have to produce evidence, which they hadn't done in 20 years of this case. Never to this date have they ever produced any evidence showing that Cutter and Michelle have done anything illegal. They finally were going to have to do that in court. But less than a week before trial, the judge called off the hearing because the government had not produced evidence to us, as the Cheder Michel. That might have been exculpatory, might have shown that they were innocent of the accusations against them and hadn't presented other evidence which we needed to have before trial. So the judge put off the trial and just called it off essentially because we couldn't get a fair trial. What he did in this case is he sanctioned the government. He said, you didn't comply with my orders. You had to produce this evidence. You did it 9 months late. But what he also did was say, and this case has been going on for 20 years, and it's just not right. At some point, you have to say enough is enough. And although all 20 years, perhaps, delay weren't at the hands of the government, probably 17 and a half of them were, and a lot of times it was because they went back to Congress to change the law to keep going after the LAID. And at a certain point, the judge was saying, enough's enough. You can't get a fair trial 20 years after the things you're accused of doing.
So is the provision of the Patriot Act stronger or weaker since its inception and with this actual case? Has it been able to make a dent at all?
I'm sorry, one more time?
So since the inception of the Patriot Act, is it stronger or weaker? And has this case impacted it to put a dent in the actual power of the Patriot Act?
Well, there's a lot of different provisions in the Patriot Act. What we're dealing with this case is one particular amendment to the Patriot Act, which tried to expand the definition of terrorist activity. The judge in his ruling didn't actually deal with that particular issue. And if we ever went to trial, that would be an issue once the government was forced to present its case. But the government's never presented its case, whether it's under the Patriot, whether it's under the Anti-Terrorism Act of 96, whether under the Immigration Act of 1990, or the McCarran-Walter Act. The government's never had to produce any evidence in this case to say what Sergeant Michel are alleged to have done. And the truth is they have nothing, and they know that.
So, I mean, you know, Michelle, you've talked about this, your case being an attempt for the government to grab immigrants and deport them for their political work. And even a former FBI director, I think William Webster, has said that none of the LAA engaged in any criminal activity, and had they been citizens, there's no basis for this arrest. So do you think this sends out a strong message to the immigrant community about reaffirming their right to protest and continue to build a movement for the things that they feel strongly about?
No, absolutely. If we didn't you know, stay and afford this injustice with all the people coming abroad to help us, I mean, you will be amazed to the extent of the support. I mean, it's everybody against the government on one side and everybody else on the other side, almost exclusive and unanimous support. But also, if we didn't do that, then this coalition or this broad front against the government attempts would have not been established, and at the same time, the government would have succeeded in what they're doing. So the message here to immigrants is when your constitutional rights are attacked, when your rights, civil rights in general, are attacked, you should really stick to it and fight. That's right. That doesn't affect you personally only, but affects the whole immigrant community.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've been talking to folks a lot just in other organizations and organizers, and the question around how do you sustain the motivation to do the work and sustain the passion and the drive, right? And, you know, you've held this out for 20 years, but you've not only done it, but you've been consistent in your work in the movement and your role as a political activist. What's kept you going, and where do you find your drive?
Simple. It's people. There's people who I met, wonderful people in this case, people who I would have not met before. I have close friends for 20 years now. That started in day one, and it's up to this moment. It's family, and it's friends, and it's community, and it's just the people. And, you know, some people might say this could be a cliche, but it's not. It's a tremendous, tremendous source of empowerment, of pride, of passion, of love, and what else you need to really stand strong, that the most important things in life are there, provided to you by people who understand the meaning of this case, but also understand your family's suffering and what the toll on our lives through this case. But, you know, that's, if I can say, that's the positive side of the case. And that side of the case is up to our side, not to the government side.
So we're looking at, and particularly in terms of continuing to fight for the right of a Palestinian self-determination. I mean, we saw that CAR, the Council on American and Arab Relations, which is a large and pretty mainstream Muslim organization, received an award from Senator Barbara Boxer. And it was reneged because of allegations that they were dealing with quote-unquote terrorist organizations. So, you know, Mark, you had said, and you and Mishasha feel free to jump in, but Mark, you had said that it's not... that in the 21st century, to be pushing for a Palestinian homeland is not revolutionary, but yet we're still getting, it's still a difficult issue to push for, and we're talking about even Jimmy Carter, right, who just recently pushed out a book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid, is getting huge backlash, and, you know, taking on the ruling class on this issue.
Well, sure, it's all linked to together. Is the right to dissent here in the United States, the right to be able to speak for the Palestinian cause, the right to criticize is all in the First Amendment. It's the right to speak your mind. And the Constitution says, you know, that provision of the Constitution was not enacted to protect the views that we agree with or the views that we like, but it was enacted to protect the unpopular views. And if our views are unpopular in the government's eyes, same does Jimmy Carter's views, you know, they go all out to try to prevent our views from being disseminated to the general public. Because in our opinion, in my opinion, if the people know that the government and, you know, their policies in the Middle East needs to be open to all sides, and who's more important to be debating the Middle East than the Arab American community and the Palestinian community? Those are the people who know the region, who know the area, and who have a view, and this view could, if listened to, contribute to the larger debate about our policies. But some people want this view to be out of the debate, and that's what we're fighting for.
Mm-hmm. But do you think this repression is going to stop? Even, I mean, we're talking about a pretty large mainstream Muslim organization, right? And the impact of even being able to push the conversation around the Palestinian self-determination to the left. Given, you know, these attacks, what is that going to mean for the movement?
Well, it means that this is a long-term struggle, you know, a struggle to establish the First Amendment, establish freedom of speech, freedom of association, has not been born by the attack on the LA8. It's been born since, you know, the beginning of the country, 1917, 3,000 Jews have been grabbed at their homes and deported, the Red Scare, you know, because of their quote-unquote, their undesirable views. The Japanese Americans have been incarcerated as a fifth column during World War II. The McCarthy era law, and you can go all through our history, and the fight is going on. So this is a continuation of that fight and a continuation for the forces who want a better society and a better future for our country to keep going until they succeed.
Hmm. So, Mark, this case was involving Hutter and Michelle, two of the LA 8. What are the implications for the other six, and is anything else in the works?
Well, three of the other individuals have become permanent. Three of the other eight have become permanent residents, and one is on hold pending the results of this case. One, Iyad Barakat, this summer, we're glad to report, became a United States citizen after his 20-year battle with the INS and the government denying him citizenship on the same basis that tried to deport him unsuccessfully 15 years earlier. And we had to go back to district court in Los Angeles this summer to overturn that denial of his citizenship. So it's a long battle. But it's not just the LA-8. It's really, as Michelle was saying, it's really all immigrants in this country who want to be able to speak out on the issues that are dear to their heart and are they feel passionate about. People who are supporting liberation movements in their home countries. Every organization, every entity that's fighting for change in the country, at some point resorts to some military means. The terrorist provision in the immigration laws is so broad that it encompasses the use of a gun, even the threat to use a gun to endanger property. You can be deported now and criminally prosecuted in the United States if you provide material support to a terrorist terrorist organization. And what the government's position is, that if you distribute magazines for an organization abroad, or you raise money for the charities of those organizations, or for the hospitals or the daycare centers that they run, and that organization has a military component to it at all, which, as I said, almost everyone does, then you have been providing material support to a terrorist organization. The law has to bottom line change, because until it does, people like Hunter Michel and the other individuals in LA 8 and other individuals in this country who are supporting causes abroad that our government doesn't like, and that's really the import of it, because if it's causes our government likes, they're not going to go after them.
Yeah.
But they will hear, and they did hear, and unfortunately, the Supreme Court of the United States in this case, in the LAA case, said that it was constitutional for the government to forbid a selective prosecution challenge in an immigration case. We had gotten this case thrown out for the second time initially, based on selective prosecution. After going after the Palestinians in this country differently than they treated people who supported the Contras in Nicaragua or anti-Castro Cubanos. And we said they're treating people differently based on pure political views. And the case got thrown out. Congress then passed a law saying you can't bring a selective prosecution challenge in immigration cases. And the Supreme Court, in an abomination of a decision, upheld that. So it's a long-term struggle until people ultimately get these laws changed or stand up and say enough is enough. People like Carter Michelle and the other individual of the LA are going to be needing to spend 20 years of their lives battling cases like this.
Mm-hmm.
And what we really are asking right now of people who are supportive of the LA is to write to Michael Chertoff, the head of DHS, saying, enough is enough. Do not appeal this. Do not take this case any further. Let this case die. Going after people who have never committed a crime for 20 years because you don't like their political views is not what this country is about. So we're urging people to write Chertoff at this point, care of DHS in Washington, D.C. It'll get to the right people, and urge that this LAA case finally be dropped and there be no further appeals.
Yeah, so we're talking about the Department of Homeland Security.
Correct.
And so what are the specific laws that you think the movement should be actually trying to address? And given that, you know, we've got, there's been a whole movement to think through, you know, not trying to break the immigrant rights movement by saying these are the good immigrants and these are the bad immigrants, but what can we do to really push forward a comprehensive immigrant rights bill that has this type of provision in it, along with issues of amnesty and actual rights expansion for immigrants? Because if we have the FBI saying if they were citizens, this wouldn't have happened, but because of their immigration status, the state was allowed to do this.
Well, on the political issue, on this front, keeping on the vein of people being able to advocate for causes they believe in strongly, whether in this country or abroad, both for U.S. citizens and for immigrants, the law has to be changed to really go after people who are really only supporting terrorist activity. The statute as written wasn't bad. You can be deported or you can be criminally prosecuted if you are supporting terrorist activity. But the terrorist activity has to be what would be commonly known as terrorist activity, not just the use of a gun to endanger property, because then that can be used politically in any way you want. So what has to happen is the laws have to be changed to both allow deportation and criminally prosecute people only for supporting true terrorist activity, as one would define that in common terms. And part of the Immigration Act and part of the criminal laws do define that. It's hijackings, it's bombings of civilians, et cetera, that anyone would think of, not raising money for charities of an organization that also has a military component to it.
Well, I think in these times when the right and the law is attacking the least protected and the most vulnerable, it's that line in terms of what's considered quote-unquote terrorist activity, it's the line is very thin. Right, and so anyone can get literally swept up.
It can, and then, you know, what's happened is, you know, the communist of the 1950s is the terrorist of today, and that's how the laws are being used. They went after communists and painted people with a broad brush in the 50s and 60s, and now they're labeling all these people terrorists, even though they haven't done anything. And that's really why the National Lawyers Guild and the ACLU and the Center for Constitutional Rights, the organizations that have been representing the LA for 20 years, have really, you know, stayed in there and dedicated themselves to this case, because of the importance of the broader issue. We, you know, we I love Michelle, I love Hutter, and love the other individuals. And, you know, I think as Michelle said, we've bonded and had some true friendships over the years. But the broader issue is really the political one of really defending the rights of immigrants and now U.S. citizens to speak out and support groups abroad that are not unpopular, or in this country, perhaps.
So, hello, this is Damon, the other co-host here.
Hi, Damon.
I mean, I think the kind of the way the country is actually going in terms of any, you know, full speed, lock everybody up, particularly if you have a political view that is dissenting of other folks. I think one of the real questions that I have in terms of the particular Congress and changing the laws and whatnot, you know, both the Democrats have won the majority in terms of the Congress. Not to say necessarily that the Democrats will actually change things for the better, because we know on some issues it's not necessarily so. What, say Michelle, what is your take in terms of the Democrats' effect on laws that target not only immigrants but political dissidents, et cetera?
Well, so far I don't see any signs that they're going strong against that trend. It seems to me that the people who elected the Democrats to where they are now, should really stand up and ask them to be accountable. We need to really let them know what we think, and let them know that we expect them to not just throw at us certain buzzwords and slogans, but we want to see some action. We want to see results. We want to see laws changes and openness becomes the situation and not repression. So I don't expect much if we don't ask them to be accountable, but I can tell you if the people stand up and be counted, I think they will count. The Democrats will count.
Well, it's interesting because our first guest on the show, Larry Aubrey, who's very active in the black community in Los Angeles, was talking about basically saying, the question I asked him was like, what is it going to take for black people to fight against police brutality, fight against all these things? So he said basically, even as cruel as it sounds, it's like they basically haven't been hurt enough by it. So I guess the question I relate to this is in terms of, to me it seems so clear that if people, not even just for the decency, like humanity, to actually fight for the most oppressed, the people who are most vulnerable, but even if for their own self-interest in the long term, knowing that they could be the same victim of this thing. So what do you think? I mean, is it going to actually motivate? Do you think it needs to get worse before it gets better?
No, it's a simple thing. I mean, the politicians are politicians. They're not going to do anything. They're not going to get out of their comfort zone and take risks, quote-unquote, because they're only motive is to get reelected, and they don't want to really put themselves out there and really fight the struggles that the people are demanding. So who's going to do it if the politicians are not doing it? It's the people. That's the question. If they don't do it, then they're going to be done, and you cannot sit down and complain. You got to get out there and do it. So nobody's going to scratch your back, except yourself. So that's an Arabic proverb. Incumbent to the people that wants the changes to go out and do it themselves.
I mean, so KPFK listeners, 90.7 FM in LA, at 8.7 FM in Santa Barbara, you heard it. You need to get the back scratched.
Sure. So
you guys gotta get out
of it. KPFK listeners. That's the first line.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that we've always been trying to do in terms of really saying, like, the only way this is going to change is if you actually get out in the streets, you actually pressure politicians, you actually form organizations and whatnot.
And convince the people. You cannot just do it by lobbying politicians. That's not what I said. I mean, that's an important aspect of it. When you have the people behind you, you go and put the voice of the people right at the lap of the politicians. But we need to organize. We need to respond, like, for example, in the LA Times, in this case, and I'm referring to the LA 8 case, if it writes anything about the LA 8 case, we need people to write letters to the editors and ask the Homeland Security to dropped the case. And as Mark has said, enough is enough. So we need to win this one and go to the next one.
So in our last minute, Michelle, you want to close with anything? I mean, this was brought on by the political work that you've done. What are you currently working on? And beyond writing to the Department of Homeland Security, what are, in the last minute or so, what are the other issues that that you're currently working on?
In regards to the LAA case?
In regards to the LAA case and then the larger issue around the Palestinian fight for self-determination.
Well, the major thing that we're doing right now is to let the people know that the case is not over yet. Because after 20 years, you know, when there is no legal, hearings and stuff like that, people tend to forget. I got a lot of emails telling me that they thought it was over. And people think this ruling made it over. It's not over till it's over. The government could appeal. So what we're working on now is to spread the word that the case is not over yet. And whenever we have anything in terms of calling for an action, for people to respond.
Well, thank you, Michelle and Mark Vanderhoot. This ends today's show of Voices from the Front Lines. And everybody write to the Department of Homeland Security and tell them to drop the case. This is your co-host, Tammy Bang Lu, with Damon Azali. We'd like to thank our guests, Larry Aubrey, Mark Vanderhoot, Michelle Shahade. And today we had music from KRS-One, Rico Babon, and then the Buena Vista Social Club, which we're going out with. We'd like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, and Melisa Figueroa for working the boards, and our production assistant, Lisa Adler. We'll see you next week on Voices from the Frontlines Radio. Up next is Beneath the Surface with Susie Weissman.